Hey, hello, Doris. Welcome back to Fast Track Podcast.
Hello again. It's good to see you again.
I want to have the second recording with you because I checked out your Instagram and to my surprise, you mentioned in your previous recording, you said that you have a house in Spain. I thought it's a family home, but when I check it, it looks like a resort. And actually, you turn it into Airbnb, which I find is really amazing idea because that allows you, also your family, to have more freedom to move around and also have some kind of passive income. So I want to explore this idea a little bit more with you in this session, and to give my audience a little bit, how to say, idea of how they can make it happen, even though it is not in Spain, it might be in another country, and an idea of how to turn their home and asset into something that is working for them and helping them to achieve more freedom in life. So, tell us a little bit about the house in Spain and how did you come up with this idea with your husband to build one yourself?
So we were living in England, in London. We had bought a small apartment in the center of London and remade it totally and then sold it for twice the money. So the idea came up that eventually at some point we would like to live in Spain because my husband is from Spain. So we had been scouting properties and plots and houses for quite a few years to just get an idea of the prices and what we really want to really sit down and analyze what's our budget, what do we want, how do we want an apartment, do we want a house? And then we came to the idea to actually want to build it ourselves because we didn't find anything that really matches all the requirements that we had. We had traveled the world, so we were quite clear on, we've seen a lot of different houses, we stayed at a lot of different houses, and we moved a lot of times, so we got a clear idea of really what our ideal house looks like, and we hadn't found it. So the idea came up to actually look for a plot. So we started looking for a plot of land in southern Spain, and finally found the one, which was fairly expensive back then, but it was just our dream because it was on a hill overlooking the whole coast, and it was just absolutely perfect in every sense. So while still living in London, we acquired that plot of land, and we started going to all these grand design shows and in England and watching all these shows about self-building your home to really get an understanding. We read a lot about self-building your home and also, got an understanding of the local laws and, what you need to do. Started applying for all the documentation, started looking for an architect. We designed it ourselves, so we are not architects. We don't have anything to do with design, but we just have a passion to build our own place. So we designed it ourselves, but then had to obviously sign it off by a architect, which we found. We found somebody suitable who had a similar minimalist approach that we have, and got this signed off. And then we moved to Spain and started with the build.
So this
Now,
is, sorry, I need to ask here. So basically, you guys already planned to move to Spain. So you prepare yourself by looking for land and build a house there. So it's already planned when you were still in UK.
That's right. That's right. We because I'm from Italy, my husband is from Spain, we were living in England. There was always this question, where will we end up? But it made sense cost-wise and also climate-wise, Spain, won over the three options, so we decided for Spain, exactly. And we planned it all before actually moving there. And only once everything was quite clear, we moved there, exactly.
Okay, and how long does it take you to find this plot of land actually remotely? Back then you're still living in UK, right?
Well, we didn't. We weren't in a hurry because we were in the middle of our careers in London, so it wasn't very imminent. So we had quite some time. It took us around 2 years to really do the research and really find the right place. A lot of comparison, a lot of going and seeing the place, talking to people, really understanding, is this the place? Would we want to live in this place? What's the community like? What's the activities around like? Would this be a great place where our children would grow up, schools, the whole thing. So it was really like a proper in-depth research to figure out if this is the right place, rather than just buying something off the internet and then realizing this is absolutely not what I had expected. So I think that's quite crucial to really do your research properly and get clear together with your partner about what you really want. You know, what's your priority? Is it the view? Is it being close to the airport, which for us was really crucial because we were still living, working for our London companies. So being 20 minutes from the airport was quite crucial because so that we could also travel a lot and family and friends would easily come to visit us, because if you're in the middle of nowhere, that's a bit harder. So it's just a lot of different things to take into account before taking the decision. Also going to talk to the local government to just make sure that it's all legal, because it does happen, especially in Southern Europe, that you know, it may be a scam or something. So it's really important to just double check all the paperwork, but it's all legal, because you know, before actually signing, to just be on the safe side, because things happen.
And is the place where your husband is from, or actually it's another city that you actually...
It's close by. It's close by. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know the region.
So he knows the region, yes. Yes, in our case, it was a bit easier because he did know the region and he wanted to go, you know, back there.
And you both were, you know, you both discussed, you negotiated with your employers to be able to work remotely. What if you get the land, you're ready to build, and then you cannot work remotely? What's the plan?
It would have just been to have bought a land. You know, we wanted to do an investment anyway. So investing in a plot of land is never a bad thing. Eventually, we would have at some point built it and then just have it as a holiday home. And that was always the plan, because we always wanted to have something, you know, as a base camp. I mean, so far it was our apartment in London, but we wanted something a bit bigger as our family was growing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you walk us through the building process? How long did it take? What are the headaches you had?
Now, the interesting part is, you would assume that once you decide to build your house, you just, you know, you get in a lot of offers from different builders and, you know, from different companies. And we did that, and the cost was very, very high, well above our budget. So we resorted to Plan B and set up our own building company. That's, you know, it's not very common. So we set up our own building company. We bought all the materials for the building, you know, as in crane and everything, you know, scaffolding, everything that you need for a building. And and then we just hired individual teams or individual people to actually work on a day rate on the build. Now, I was on maternity leave, so I had a whole year of maternity leave, which I used to do all the project management, and I did the whole project management of the build with all these people. And once the build was over, we then sold all the materials secondhand again, you know, and closed down the building company and just had our house. This is very unconventional. Usually what you would do is actually, you know, getting somebody to build it for you. But for us, it was a fantastic experience. We learned every day, and we could modify the build as we went along. You know, we realized once the building, the structure was done, you could see actually, if I have my window here, and you know, why don't we move it here, and we've got the whole view. You could just modify along the way, which you couldn't if you actually
Tell
had
me,
somebody else building the house. It would cost more.
Yeah, tell me more about the maternity leave as a project manager building your own home. So you were on maternity leave, but your husband,
my third child.
With your third child.
Yes.
And your husband was still working UK back then?
He was already in Spain working for a London company. So we were both working for a London company, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. So you already moved to Spain by that time?
Yes. So we moved to Spain. We rent a house next to the plot for 1 year while we built the house. So we had to finish it in 1 year, because then we wanted to move in, and then I had to go back to work. So
that's
it was
very
quite a set time frame, and we managed to build it in 1 year.
Okay. First of all, to start your own building company is conventional. Second of all, you really fully utilize your 1 year maternity leave and get your house ready. And yeah, for the family, it's really amazing. So through
It was,
this.
but it was interesting. If you imagine, I had my little baby always on my side. So his playground, his whole first year was the building site. He didn't know anything else. You know, this was just his life, but it was fun.
Mask. How expensive it is to hire a building company versus you build it yourself? What would you say the cost difference? Because it was really, for me, it's really surprised to
It
hear that.
is literally, so we literally spent half of what the quotes were. Obviously you need to take into account my time, which is a whole year of project management. So that's
Okay.
amounts to something, but yes, it's literally half. We saved half of the money.
Right. Okay. How did you find out that the, you know, if you start your own building company, the cost will be much lower, it will be feasible? Like how did you do that calculation? Because start a company, there's a lot of operational costs, there's some head count and then some overheads, right?
For us, it was mostly because manual labor is not very expensive in southern Spain, so that's where they, building companies would make a huge margin. So we wanted to cut on that. So we preferred to really choose our, the type of people we wanted to work with. Also because our build was quite unconventional in the sense that we had underfloor heating, which isn't usual in southern Spain. So we'd have to have somebody specialist anyway. We would have solar panels. We would, the build is very different from a standard build. It's very minimalist, it's very modern. So the standard company wasn't our go-to option anyway. Plus, it was twice as expensive. So it just didn't make sense to do it ourselves.
Okay, do you mind what is the quote of the building to build that?
So we had a quote of 600,000 euros to build. Now on top of the cost of the plot that we paid, which was 220,000 euros, and we literally, yeah, it was
Wow.
half the cost for which was, a whole villa with pool.
Right, and also, is it on the hill? Does it make it more difficult to build because it's not flat?
When it's on a hill, it is much more expensive because the structure needs to be much more, heavier, met the steel needs to be stronger, and the build is just more unconventional. The access is harder because you can't just get there with your trucks right there. Even the windows, it was a huge operation to put the windows in place. We had to have a huge crane to get it there. So it was all a bit more challenging. But you've got the amazing view, which just makes up for it.
Talking about that, I'm going to link your Airbnb booking in the description. So anyone who's fancy a warm holiday in Spain, living in an amazing villa with ocean view and swimming pool, check out Doris Villa. Okay. It was really amazing. It's amazing. So how, looking back, how do you describe this experience? Would you do it again? Or, you know, some people they regret they do it themselves because so much headache. How was it for you?
It was, it's not all rainbows, and it was hard, especially because we had three children under five, that was so our nights were very short, and there were a lot of things that didn't go according to plan, so we had to change plan, go to plan D eventually. There's a lot of red tape, especially in southern Spain, so you have to deal with that. You just things getting electricity set up. It's been a lot of going there, a lot of patient, and just being just taking it by the day, because there are a lot of challenges unknown to somebody who is not, who isn't. I've not never worked in this environment. I don't have a background in building, so it was a lot of just taking risks and going along with it. But eventually everything worked out fine. Right after the build, I would not have wanted to build something else. But right now we are looking into doing something similar again. We're now looking at different plots of land to create a different kind of experience. Sort of a cave house, a luxury cave house in the desert. It's what we're looking at. but I'm excited again to go through this process because it is just very creative. And then having at the end of, you know, I call it my fourth baby because it is, there's so much sweat going into it, but then it's the, this personal satisfaction and that you have done it. And then when you live in it, it's just, you know, every corner of the house. And it is just a very, very gratifying experience.
Mm-hmm. So where are you looking now to build this cave house?
Well, we've been looking at a lot of different areas, and now we're zooming in again in southern Spain because it is just an area that I'm in love with. So
yeah, and also
you
already built a house there, so you know the process and how to deal with government regulations and language. Yeah.
And I do know the builders and you know the plumbers, and I've got a bit of a better knowledge now because before it was really just looking up in ads and finding people available, suitable, you know, and you would have these interviews with these people with, you know, obviously not having much of a knowledge of what to ask really. So it's really about
talking about people. Do you have experience with you know, you have a bad hire, the person actually is not qualified or doesn't have the right attitude, then you have to get rid of this person and then find someone new? Because I always find it's people, one, it's one of the most challenging elements when you run a project or starting your own business.
Absolutely. And it was for me extra challenging being a woman in southern Spain, you know, especially in the building industry. It's a male dominated environment. So as a woman, I wouldn't be taken serious up front. But I'm half German. So, you know, I'm very strict and I've got a lot of project management skills. So we got to a point where they really started respecting me. At the end of the day, I was the client, and they realized I have very clear ideas and I know what I'm talking about. So, but it was initially a struggle. It's also interesting from you know, human point of view to really get to understand people locally, how they work, you know, what mood moves them, what motivates them, and really get them to get involved in the build. Not just as a job, but as something that they're you know, inspired about. So it's and we ended up with a very good relationship with each of them. There have been a few people that just haven't worked out, and we had to let them go and find somebody else. And that happens, especially when you work with 10, 12 different parts at a time. Things do happen. But yes, it was an interesting experience, especially on a personal level.
Yeah, I used to live in Africa, and I totally understand what you mean. So let's touch on a little bit technical side.
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you know when what should be installed first and what should be installed later? Like the sequence of the building, right? Like the plumbing, the cables. Would you totally rely on the building team? Like, they just know what needs to be done. Yeah, of course I know you're shaking your head. So how would you know? How did you acquire that knowledge so you can instruct them what needs to be done?
Now that's the beauty of our, you know, the time we live in. You've got internet and you've got everything in there. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Grand Design series. It's a series in the UK, and there's a series of bills. So they follow in these episodes, they follow people as they build their own house. So after we've seen probably 20 of these, we knew what comes next, and that windows will always arrive late, you know, things like that. So we would order them much earlier. I ordered them back home in my hometown in Italy, and they were shipped all the way over. So it was all, you know, each part of the project was quite planned. I had a proper timeline and, you know, milestones and everything worked out, rather than just relying. Obviously, I would ask the local experts, but I preferred having my own clear plan.
Yeah. And did you also work with the architect at the same time, check back and forth with him, or after he signed off, then you don't need to involve him?
Well, by law, you have to sign it off with an architect, and they need to come, I think, every 2 months to check that everything's according to plan, because that's the plan you got, the plan, you know, the building permission for. So it needs to be signed by the architect every through a few months, so that you, at the end of the day, you get your permit.
How long did you live there with your family?
Once we moved in, we lived there for 3 years.
Okay, and then after that, you moved to Ireland.
And then after that, yes, we just we thought, or we believe, that once we have our own house, you know, that we would finally settle, like, you know, society expects you to do. Especially, you have three children, you build your house, now you settle. But after a few years, you know, we're just digital nomads by heart. So after 3 years, we just had this feeling of moving on again. And you know, I'm sure there's a few people in the audience who just can relate and can understand what I mean with that. So after 3 years, we decided to move on, and we decided for Northern Ireland. And the big decision was, what are we going to do with the house? Obviously, you know, we put so much effort in it, so there was no discussion about selling it. So we definitely wanted to keep it. But it was very ours, because we, you know, we built the furniture ourselves. It was very personal. But then we decided that we would want to rent it out short term, just so that we could use it during our holidays, and, you know, we could block the time for us where we would spend time there. The idea was really, you know, just to cover the mortgage costs and the you know, maintenance costs. But it turned out to be an amazing passive income.
And how many years? No, not how many years. How many days now per year you spend there with your family?
So we usually tend to go there on our summer holidays, the kids' holidays. I would say in total about 2 months per year.
Yeah, okay. And for the rest of the 10 months, and you rent it out on Airbnb.
Exactly, yeah. And we prefer short term, because so that we can always last minute, you know, go there for a weekend or something, rather than, you know, renting it out for the whole year, because then you can actually not use it yourself.
Yeah. And to start an Airbnb business, how was it like at the beginning? How did you get people know about your house? How did you get the first booking? Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
I must admit, you know, I'm a big fan of Airbnb, because I've been working with them for the past 7 years, and the platform is just amazing. You know, there's amazing help to get you set up with everything, you know, with pictures and everything. So it's very, very smooth. It's very easy to just get set up, even if it's, you know, even if you just rent out your house for, let's say, 2 months a year, because you're going traveling and you're going away with work. It's very easy. And they promote it in a very, you know, in a very seamless way. And the more bookings you get, and the more 5-star ratings you get, the more visible you are, and the more bookings you will get. So it's really crucial that the first few bookings are, you know, you get very good reviews, so that you're building yourself. Obviously, the first, you know, few bookings were a bit of a challenge, because it's different if you have your own house or if you rent it out. So I did ask, you know, I put the price lower. I did ask my guests, you know, if they can give me some feedback, because it's the first time I'm renting it out. What is it you miss? What would you like to have? So that I can really improve it as we go along. And this is what I'm continuing doing. I always try to get the feedback from them to further improve, you know, the guest experience, and to be able to up the prices.
Well, that's a good idea. And did you also do any advertisement elsewhere, or purely leveraging on the organic traffic from the platform?
Exactly. Well, yes, it was mostly on the organic traffic. I set up my Instagram account, and through there I did get a few guests who would then book on Airbnb. But it was just, you know, the first, or a lot of recommendations within, so guests who had come would recommend us to their friends, to their families, and that would really speed up the increase as such. A lot of other people, you know, play with different platforms. They use both Booking and Home Away, you know, different platforms. For me, it was crucial to just stay with Airbnb, because they are, with Airbnb, I can decide who I want to, you know, have stay at my house. So I don't want 7 students, you know, smashing the place, because I need to, you know, respect the neighbors as well, because it's my house after all, and I don't want to affect the quiet neighborhood. So I really just choose having families with children, you know, people who really appreciate the house, who appreciate the style, the minimalism, and who appreciate being in a quiet environment with amazing views.
Nice. And how long did it take you to, you know, allow this business to take off?
It took possibly 6 months. After 6 months, it did start taking off. Then obviously we had a few COVID years in between, where we mostly had just local people, like, you know, Spanish people. And then soon after COVID, it really hit big time. The demand was amazingly high. So it's been a very good investment.
Right. And can you say that with that decision, the 1 year sweat putting into building the house, now this asset can allow your family basically live in anywhere on earth that give you the freedom?
Absolutely. It is, in my opinion, it was worth the effort, because it now allows us to have a base camp, which I think is crucial, especially as digital nomads, to have one place which you can call home also for our children. You know, this is home. This is where we have our, you know, all our stuff in the cellar. And, you know, this is where we go home to. And it allows us to move wherever. If things don't work out, we can always go back. You know, we've got the flexibility of the passive income to actually be able to live in other places and have this basic, income that we don't have to worry about, which covers all the costs, maintains the house, so that we've got somebody who looks after the pool, a gardener, so that when we actually go back, we've got the house all set up and nicely done, rather than having to go back and starting to fix a lot of things and, you know, doing the garden and the whole thing. So it's it's definitely
and
would
you
important
mind
to have a place come. Yeah, go.
So would you mind sharing with us what would be the, let's not say your mortgage details, just say the revenue from Airbnb from this house, because then, you know, someone can think about if they have the actual cash with their investment, what kind of return they can get.
Now, obviously, it depends always on the size of the house, you know, the location of your house as well. If you're close to a beach, if you're close to a city, close to an airport, the size of the house and everything. So for us, it really covers the costs, the mortgage, all the maintenance costs, electricity, all the utility bills. And on top of that, it really gives us more than enough to actually pay our rent in Switzerland.
And before you rent it out, before you did all this this decision, did you do a calculation you think it will work out?
Not really, because for us it was really just we didn't want to have it sit there, you know, all closed up, because we know that a house, when it's not used, it deteriorates. So it was really, for me, it was initially just important to cover the costs.
Yeah.
So everything on top was really a bonus, and now it has turned into business, which I didn't initially figure. So now that we had this experience, our next project will be actually an investment as a business, you know. So really, we're calculating really what are the costs, how much will it cost me to really build it, and what will I get out of it, comparing what's in the area, you know, what can I charge on Airbnb, etc. So it's really, the next project will be more of a calculation. This was it had just happened.
Okay. Let's talk about the renting out your own home, because I was telling you last weekend, I was at my parents' in-laws' place. We talk about they want to move to Italy. Actually, they can rent out their house, but then there's like such a mental resistance to rent out your own home, which you have all your furniture, cooking utensils, your own, I don't know, personal items. I think if you have a house or apartment that is, you bought it for rental, it's okay, but it's your own home. How would you help those people to overcome their mental barrier?
It's a very good question, actually, and I was struggling with it initially, because, you know, it was our home, and the idea of having somebody else sleeping in your bed and using your, you know, your bathtub and, you know, cooking in your kitchen was quite challenging for me. Now, what helped me was to actually, when we moved out, to actually remove all our personal stuff. So, you know, our kids' pictures, we would take them off and just make it a bit more neutral. And we would have a box with all our stuff, all our kitchen stuff, our really personal kitchen stuff, you know, plates that our kids painted, stuff like that, that we would just put in a box and put in the cellar. So when we go there for 2 months in summer, we just take those boxes out, you know, all their toys, you know, their softwares, which they really love. And then we take just the three boxes out, and then it's home again, right? And then when we leave, we just move these boxes back down, and then we leave a neutral space where with things we don't really, you know, we don't have this emotional attachment to. So I think that's definitely helped.
Okay, let's just say I use Pareto rule. Maybe 80% of the things are general, maybe 20% of the things you own at home are a bit more personal. You just select the ones that's more personal to you, you keep it away, and then remove personal pictures. So yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. If
Exactly.
I remove all the pictures and all the, you know, small accessories away, it will look more neutral. And then if, even for the guests, they don't feel like, oh, I'm stepping in someone else's home. I'm just renting an Airbnb. Yeah.
Exactly. And then obviously, you know, all the toys, like the baby toys and all that, we all left it because our house is built for families with small children, and our children are now, you know, 10, 12, and 15. So they no longer use them anyway. So they have a, you know, second use, because we were very mindful about recycling, upcycling, which, you know, at the house we recycled a lot and upcycled a lot. So, you know, this is all used again, and it's great for me to see that it still has some use. So even if it's some personal stuff, I'm happy to let go because my children are no longer using it, or our old buggy, or, you know, things like that, or all the beach toys. We all leave it there for the guests to use, because it just makes sense.
Yeah. Would most of the guests are families coming to a place?
Yes, because it's the ones who enjoy it most, because we've got swings, we've got football tables, we've got it is set up for a family with children.
And I saw some of the custom-made furnitures like the dining table, the bunk beds. Did you design that? Did you ask the builders to build it? Just fit into the house, the room?
No, we designed it ourselves and created it ourselves together with my brother-in-law, who is a carpenter. So we would design it, and he would just execute
You have the magic formula of everything.
it.
Looks great. So, what is your plan now? Like, now, given that you have a home base in Spain, when you're not using it, you already established an Airbnb business from this home. You're living in Switzerland now with your family. Do you feel that literally that gives you way more freedom now whenever you want to move to the other country? You don't have the pressure to always have an employment to support a family.
Yes, that's right. So it takes off that pressure, both from society but also within ourselves, to actually always have to have a fixed income, and allows to really to move around. I mean, we do both have our jobs, and well, I've set my own business. My husband is in IT, and so we do have reliable jobs, but it does make things easier. I think it's mostly about the anxiety and the overwhelm about not knowing what's next, and it does give you that sense of control, and, you know, having a backup plan always. You know, we had a situation recently where our permit here in Switzerland was about to expire, so, you know, we ended up being able to extend it, but we had our backup plan. You know, what if Well, if worse comes to worse, we just move back to Spain, right? So it is helpful, and I think it's also important, especially for a lot of people who would love to move away, who would love to experience life abroad at some point in their life, but they feel tied down because they have a property, because they have their apartment which they don't want to leave. It is just you know, I always highly recommend doing such an experience with the opportunity to actually just rent out your place. You don't have to sell it, because it is such a difficult decision. You can just rent it out, and if for some reason you then really love it wherever you move to, you can always sell it. But it's a perfect, solution or compromise in the meantime, which, you know, pays off your mortgage, gives you some passive income and gives you the security that you've got a base and you can always go back there, you know, if things just don't work out the way you expected them to work out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And tell us, what's the name of your villa in Spain? Where is it? Maybe some of the audience might want to book there this summer holidays there when you have some money.
So we're in Malaga, a 20-minute drive from the airport on the coast eastwards. So it's a small Spanish village. So it's not very touristy. It's more, you know, if you want to really immerse into local Spanish culture. And it's on a hill overlooking the coast. And in winter, you can even see across over to the Moroccan Atlas Mountains, which is just amazing. And it's called Cadario, which is Ca for short for house, home. And Dario, which is our family name.
Nice, beautiful. I'll make sure to insert this link in the description. This year, I'm not sure when I can travel again, but if the opportunity comes, I would love to go there and visit.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Thank you so much for your, you know, your sharing your experiences, Doris. It really gives me personally a lot of inspiration and also a lot of helpful tips for our audience. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Yasser, for having me.